Hey guys. Gotta start with hey guys, because that's how everyone starts their conversations on YouTube.
Hey guys. What's the thing? It's like, hey guys, thanks for tuning in. Please fave and like and blah,
subscribe.
Blah, blah.
Don't forget to subscribe.
Don't forget to subscribe. Yes, it's essential. If you are already a podcast subscriber, please do not forget to subscribe.
Click the link to the left of the window right now.
Yes. Oh, click right here. I'm making a box with my fingers. click right here. We have a t-shirt for sale. And we don't do this very often. We've done it once, so this is the second time. And
are we actually doing this right now? Sorry.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Okay, well,
time is of the essence. Time's a waste, and there's only 2 weeks, Dan. 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Okay, so I'm sorry.
Yes.
I just stopped you, but like, I didn't know that had a beginning.
Yeah, I didn't know it had a beginning either.
Okay.
It's what they call a cold open.
You want to do the things and I'll just like make random comments, or you want me to do the things and you make random comments?
I feel like we are equal partners in our random comments.
Well, so one of us has to start.
Well, one of us did.
One of us has to start again.
Oh, Dad. Okay, so obviously this is the pre-roll for the episode that will be coming out. Well, wait, no, came out. You're listening to the episode. It's not out yet when we're talking.
Am I listening to it right now?
You're not listening to it right now. Defocused. Episode about the Running Man is going to be the first episode that will have this little bumper inserted on the front of it, because we have received notice that our shirt will be going live. Look underneath your shirt. You have a URL. The URL is defocused.co/130. That is defocused.co/130. And please go to that URL, and there will be details on getting the shirt. And if you would like to get the shirt, that's good, because it helps us in a minor way. It's not like essential. Like, you're not like harming us by not buying it, but if you would
it is a very attractive shirt. If you don't buy it, all your friends are gonna laugh at you.
Oh, of course, because if there's anything that I know, it's that people really love attractive shirts that have podcasts featured on them. But
well, you could lie to people and tell them that Defocused is in fact a Hollywood production company from the 1980s that went out of business for making some very bad deals and or movies, or you could just tell them it's tell them it's a restaurant or something, or a magazine, or whatever you want to tell them, because it just says Defocused. It's got a super cool logo on it.
Yeah. Backstory. We were inspired by our previous choices that usually are contaminated with the 80s, and we had reached into some of the other things that had existed in the 80s. Rather than just doing something 80s style-ish, like we had done last year with the Defocused with the triangles, we were like, you know what? Let's take it up a notch. We are now a movie production studio in the 1980s, and so we have the thing. And Dan did it. Dan did the thing.
We are now a studio that produces questionable content about ninjas and people who fight and stuff.
Cyborgs. Don't forget the cyborgs.
Cyborgs.
And Highlander.
Highlander, yeah. Highlander's a big one.
And Death Wish.
Death Wish.
Apparently.
That's a good series, man.
We didn't talk about Death Wish, but we did talk about Cobra. Mm-hmm. They did that.
So if you want a shirt that is just as good and iconic as Cobra, you'll want this shirt. And again, it's probably going to be the first link below. I'm pointing down below the MP3
the box.
Link
the box.
URL here on defocus.co/130. It'll be big blue letters with an underline. Has an underline. That's how you know it's a hyperlink on the internet. And it'll say, click here to buy the Defocus t-shirt.
Yes. Also, FYI and stuff, BT dubs. There is not just a shirt. We have received complaints in the past that many podcasts offer shirts, and that we're bringing to the table is shirts. So why should we buy your shirt over other shirts, vis-a-vis shirts? And so this year we have a hooded sweatshirt. And what is so novel about that? Well, it has a hood. That's good.
It protects you from rain.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it does, because it's also absorbent. So don't wear it in the rain for a long time.
It has ties that can be cinched so you can tighten it around your face.
Yes, if you want to imitate a certain South Park character. And there are, it's black. It's very slimming. It's a very slimming tent of sweatshirt fabric. It has the hood. And so that there's that. And then there's also the cool heathered tri-blend options, which I happen to quite enjoy from Cotton Bureau when I've ordered them from Cotton Bureau in the past. And that would be the charcoal and the turquoise, which is different because not a lot of podcasts do that, because you know why? They're afraid. They have fear in them. And we don't have that fear.
They don't have the courage to put out a heathered turquoise podcast t-shirt.
Yeah, not like us. And we also have a black regular cotton shirt. And that one's for people who are like, you know what? All this stuff is just too fancy for my calm Midwestern palate. I'm just gonna go with black, and so that there is that. So it's back in black over there.
If you happen to be a sensible Southern corporate lawyer who might be a chick, and maybe you just want to go with the solid black cotton t-shirt.
Yes. But otherwise, I highly recommend tri-blends because I happen to think they look neat.
I'm literally wearing one right now, Joe. I can't express to you how excited I am that I'm literally wearing a tri-blend charcoal heathered Cotton Bureau t-shirt right now. It's not ours because ours doesn't exist yet, because this isn't out yet.
No, that's how time works. But I'm wearing one as well, but it is not the charcoal. It is just the regular gray, which we're not selling. Thank God, because regular gray is terrible. But that is, of course, for
great
the six
sales pitch, Joe.
Yeah, it's for the six color shirt, which I am wearing as well, because I happen to like it. I've got the Roderick Online pinkish one. I've got the ATP charcoal one with the rainbow letter things for the M3 thing. You know that one?
Yeah, that one.
I got all the great shirts.
Oh, I got so many. I'm wearing Slugline right now. I got Roderick on the line. I got an XOXO one. I got so many. There are so many of them.
Yes. Oh, well, see, the key is you want everyone to be completely baffled by what you're wearing, because it doesn't mean anything to the average person on the street. I think that's a real success story in and of itself, is that you are a unique snowflake. And if you got something that has very few listeners, then you certainly will be a unique snowflake. Let me tell you that. And we happen to have removed the word podcast from our shirt this year, so it will just say defocused on it. And that just adds another layer of mystery, because who knows? We could be a company that sells custom red Mercedes limos.
It allows us options in the future. If we decide to pivot into, as you say, custom 1980s red Mercedeses, we don't have to change the t-shirts. We can just keep using the same t-shirts.
Is the multiple of that, is the plural Mercedi?
I think it's Mercedes, but with like E-E-Z.
Oh.
Mercedes.
It's a bit of a tongue twister. Well, we will get to those details later after we sell the shirts, because obviously that will give us the startup capital for our incredible Mercedes business. But please do go enjoy at defocus.co/130 and on to your regularly scheduled, in the loosest sense of that word, programming, and that would be our episode on The Running Man. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good night. No, not good night. Listen to the podcast. Go buy a shirt.
Yes. Defocus.co/130.
By the way, you're allowed to buy more than one shirt. I'm totally going to buy all of the shirts. I'm going to buy like seven of them.
But you're not obligated to. We won't
no,
love
not
you
obligated
any less.
To. I just really want one because they're very attractive.
Yes. We will think you're less attractive, but we won't love you any less.
And now The Running Man. Dun, dun, dun.
Are you ready for pain? Are you ready for suffering? If the answer is yes, then you're ready for Captain Freedom's workout.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
A little chilly.
Chilly Billy?
Sure.
I was rhyming things. I figured
don't,
that's
how
you make...
Don't people typically rhyme it with Chilly Willy?
I mean, that's a cartoon character.
Oh, right, it's the penguin.
Yeah, on the Woody Woodpecker show.
Oh, is that where he's from? Yeah, just like that Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, the one with the boat.
Yeah, the one with the boat and the penguin. The pool.
Pool pond. So...
Two.
We had received many requests for The Running Man, And I know we like specifically had discussed it in the past as a possibility for an episode, and I'd put it off. But then I'd actually seen, I saw some tweet that was going around with the opening credits where it talks about 2017 and how everything's game show and we've used up all of the oil and money and natural resources and the government, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, this is perfect. I half-heartedly suggested that we pursue this.
Mm-hmm. I've seen small parts of it. It's been in the various 80s cinema montages that were going around at some point, I don't know, like a year or two ago. It's one of the movies in the culture where things happen and people remember.
A movie, check. Although yes. I would say it's more of like a TV movie. The way that it's shot is not not to sound all movie snubby, but not like cinematic. Let's say
it feels, well, it takes place on a TV game show set, so maybe they're trying to make it feel like that.
The parts that take place on the set should feel like that, but the parts that take place in the rest of the movie, like especially when they are in the opening scene where they are fighting for their lives in a helicopter with a rear screen projection. Those probably should not feel like an episode of The A-Team or Knight Rider, because I don't think that is really a good way to keep people in. And sure enough, this is directed by Paul Michael Glazer, who was hired after they fired the first director after the first week of filming. And he's mostly probably best known as being Starsky from Starsky and Hutch.
God, I didn't even notice that.
And he's an actor a lot of the times. And then this is his second film he's directed, the first being Band of the Hand, which I'd never heard of, from 1986. And then he goes into this in 87 for The Running Man. And it's not amazing.
Steven D'Souza, though, diehard guy.
Yeah, which is super funny. It's based on a story, loosely based on a story, by Stephen King writing underneath a pen name in 1982. I guess he didn't want to be known for his novel, The Running Man, which is weird. But apparently he wrote The Running Man under a pen name in 1982, and it was adapted by Stephen D'Souza. And as we had noted in our Die Hard 2 episode, because he had written both parts of Die Hard and parts of Die Hard 2, co-writing with two different people on each occasion, that he's inconsistent with his output.
Well, I mean, he's good at writing the realism that that came along with Die Hard. In this one, the premise is a bit, well, I don't even want to call the premise absurd, because like a lot of this stuff I was trying to be like, oh, isn't that funny and silly future stuff, and then I was just like, oh, that's totally like directly similar to a lot of real things right now, so I got a little sad.
Yeah, well, see, I don't take an issue with that so much as like the there's a lot of hand-wringing about the technobabble over the satellite uplink, which is clunky and bad, and it doesn't need to be there. It feels like it's there for technical reasons to be like, yeah, tech stuff, and it's like, but you like don't, let's not, you could shorthand this some other superfluous way, like the code for the uplink, you know, we've decoded the code for the it's just like, oh god, please just stop it. Just don't do it anymore.
Well, at least that was slightly more competent than the way they got the code to turn off the electric dog fence or whatever that would make their heads blow up at the prison thing.
And they didn't even turn it off. That didn't make any sense either. It was like, we only half turned it off. It's fluctuating between on and off right now. Don't run towards it.
Because there's only one storm case that's capable of turning it off. And depending on if, you know, where you are in the building, the concrete walls could block the signal and stuff. But it's like, guys just like mopping behind the guy who's entering the code. And he turns around and goes, what are you doing here? Get out of here, guy. You're looking over my shoulder. And I don't know what you're looking at. I don't know what you could be looking at, except maybe the password to escape.
It's a little on the nose.
A lot of this movie's on the nose.
It's the opening to this is not great. Like we said, the weird title sequence with the Running Man animated character that has been extruded onto some form of 3D geometry and then rotated around. Oh, man. I don't know how much time they had to rent on that Cray 87 or whatever they rented for this, but it was not worth every penny, that's for sure. And as you mentioned to me earlier, when they were doing the helicopter scene, they even had the wireframe shot from Escape from New York. And
yeah.
The thing about that is, in Escape from New York, they didn't have the budget to use computers, so they did it all with tape and buildings that they made out of little boxes and stuff.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so it used zero computers. And in this one, they had the budget to use computers, and then they didn't. They could have easily spent that somewhere else in this film. But
on maybe a second matte painting of Los Angeles.
There's only the one view in the... oh God, what was it called? The Wilshire
Detention Center.
Wilshire Detention Center. Jesus Christ! But the yeah, that's it is baffling to me where they chose to spend money in this film, because sometimes you also run across actors like the little tiny bit part actors who come into the control rooms and stuff like that, and they have like one line or something like that, and they apparently hired people who were like, better suited for gum commercials or something. I have no idea, because like they deliver their lines like,
"Damon, you didn't have to kill him,"
and it's like, whoa, dial that back 5,000%. Like, what is that? Like,
they got a lot of stars, and then they had a smaller budget for secondary characters and extras.
Well, let's run through the stars. Arnold Schwarzenegger,
sure.
Maria Conchita Alonso, who was in Predator 2. Mm-hmm. And Predator 2...
Arnold was also supposed to be in there, if you recall.
Yeah, but he backed out of that because he was like, no, this is a bad script.
Mm-hmm.
He saw that one coming. Maybe this movie let him learn some lessons. But Maria Conchita Alonso, I prefer in Predator 2, which he went on to do after this, because I feel like she is a capable actress when given appropriate things. Unfortunately, they just like have her character die off. Well, not die, but... get hospitalized and then never seen for the latter third of that film. It's very peculiar, but she was fine for the first two thirds of it. But then we have Yaphet Kotto, who is in here for his buddy, who doesn't even like make it through the second act. And then we have Richard Dawson, who plays the antagonist, and Richard Dawson is famous for being a game show host for The Family Feud and Match Game, and he's also an actor who had been like Hogan's Heroes and stuff from way before I was born, many other things. So he's not, it's not that he can't act or do comedy. Like, I don't find a fault in him. I actually found him to be the most compelling part of this movie. He's very smarmy and awful. And cheesy, but in an adorable way that I really latched onto. The other people who are in here who are notable would be Jesse the Body Ventura, who plays
don't skip Jim Brown. Jim Brown's good.
Who plays Captain Freedom?
That's a good name.
Yeah. So who does Jim Brown play again?
Jim Brown is fireball flamethrower guy.
All right, I forgot.
He was a very famous football player turned actor later in life. He was also in Mars Attacks, if you recall.
Yes. Yeah, he had the Egypt theme thing on from the casino.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
He's been in a few things.
Yeah.
And you can't forget apparently that one fellow with the hair was the guy from Fleetwood Mac. Mick Fleetwood.
Wow.
Then you've got Sven Thorsson, who plays the big like bodyguard who pushes people around, and he's in a lot of stuff as like a big scary bodyguard slash goon, and he's also in Mallrats as a big scary mall cop.
The stars of The Running Man.
The stars of The Running Man.
They were all fantastic. All of them. Every single one. It's there's also Sub-Zero, who's mm-hmm. played by Charles Kalani Jr., who he feels familiar, but I'm not going to embarrass myself by pretending to guess where I know an actor from anymore, because that has backfired for me in several parts of the show that will be cut out. But he's enjoyable, except It's really strange how he's a hockey ninja samurai guy. It doesn't make an incredibly large amount of sense. But then there's opera guy, Dynamo.
Dynamo. I keep forgetting his name. He's got the sweet little car where his head sticks out the top, which is probably not a great design.
No. Yeah, so Dynamo's strange because he appears in and out of this film with his like Christmas lights suit, and when he's finally attacking Schwarzenegger, you get the Wagner, you know, kill the rabbit, that whole chestnut. So that's weird. And you get,
I mean, you know, he's an opera singer, so it kind of, they probably thought it was thematic, but he's got clear plastic. He's basically got like a proto Mad Max Fury Road clear plastic suit kind of thing, but it shoots lightning instead of just being ornamental.
Mm-hmm. With a purple mohawk.
Plastic mohawk.
Yeah. Well, plastic's great because it's waterproof.
Unless you fill it with electricity.
Yeah, no. That was a problem, a fault, if you will. And speaking of music and faults, we take us to Faltermeyer, who did the score for this. And he is a favorite of ours because of Beverly Hills Cop and Beverly Hills Cop 2. Mm-hmm. So naturally, here he is again. He is synthing it up in this one. Something fierce. So...
It was 1987. Everything was futuristic and electronic in this movie, and it really dated itself, didn't it?
Oh, so bad. And you think about a film like Total Recall, and you're like, oh, that's so dated, but it's only, what, three years from now, or from this movie? You know, 3 years later from this, and it feels like it's 10 years later from this film. This film feels like it was filmed in 1981.
Like, yeah, it does not feel like 87 necessarily.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't feel like it is bleeding edge in any respect.
Maybe they filmed most of it earlier, and then they had to wait for the technology to catch up, so they could do that helicopter heads up display thing.
Oh yeah, well, you know, they had to wait for the traveling mat to improve.
Oh right. What did he say? Activate traveling mat.
Third act problems. Roll. Stop. Freeze in digital memory.
Activate traveling mat. Tony, this better work, pal, or you'll be a digital memory.
Take it easy, Damon. We're loading Richard's image onto the database, and when he's mapped onto the stunt double, you'll never know the difference.
Activate traveling mat. Form of blazing sword.
I haven't heard anyone refer to it as a traveling mat in a long time.
A traveling mat, for those who don't know, is a mat that moves around the screen. And what that means is that it is an area that can be controlled independently of the other parts, usually because it's a black and white image or whatever other photochemical channel you want to use for that. So traveling,
it's cutting stuff out that's moving.
Yeah, and you'd also see that for if you watch original Star Wars stuff or things that are of that era that have not been cleaned up as much as Star Wars has. You would see like boxes around TIE fighters and stuff like that move on the starfield, and it's like, oh, well, that's weird, because why would there be a box there just moving around this object in space? And that's because they had to draw lines around all of the rigging and things and cut them out so they could cut the TIE fighter up.
Well, in the future of 1987-2017, the software they use to do that digitally is very expensive. I like that they even needed to put that line in there.
Yes. Well, and they have to put it in pixel storage when they're done with it.
Well, of course.
Yeah. Where else would you store it?
Still use stupid terms like still store and stuff in color correction applications. So it's it feels very... who made the paint box? That was Quantel?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Quantel paintbox wasn't far off of this kind of stuff.
Oh, man, so ridiculous. Yeah, but they use that for their photo manipulation in later scenes of the film. It cracked me up because it's so phony baloney. But I mean, I guess we could start with like the premise of this, and that he's some guy who works ostensibly for this corrupt government, who is on this helicopter mission, who gets orders to kill a bunch of people, but doesn't want to in Bakersfield. And so the people who are on the helicopter.
Bakersfield's a big city, by the way.
No.
In this movie, it's got skyscrapers and stuff.
It was so confusing the way they showed Bakersfield. I was just like, what? When did that happen? Like, has crystal meth like turned into a booming industry, Will, that I wasn't aware of?
They have more than that in Bakersfield.
Such as? Cow poop? I don't know.
Desert.
Seriously.
Yeah, so basically, yeah, he's in the military in this future dystopian world, and he's supposed to kill a bunch of people who are, what are they? They're protesting or rioting or something because they need food and they're hungry, and the economy has collapsed because it's 2017. He says, I'm not going to kill a bunch of unarmed people because my little sensors here tell me nobody has any weapons.
Yeah, and that's
and then the person over
amazing.
The radio basically orders the second in command to take him out and then fulfill the mission anyway. So then there's a fight in the helicopter, which is a really bad idea. Although it's a very spacious helicopter, like throwing people against the console and the stick in the helicopter is probably not the safest thing to do.
No,
but they do, and they subdue Arnold, which is kind of a bummer because you know he's a big hero guy and stuff.
And we get the first of many ADR Arnold grunts through the course of this film.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's mostly like that.
Yeah, they're all gems because
they're all unique and we love them all equally. Just they're all our children.
Don't ask me to pick a favorite. It's ridiculous.
I love all my Arnold grunts equally.
So he's leaning at the helicopter, going, and by leaning at the helicopter, I mean leaning out over the rear screen projection. And then they have him hauled back in and they knock him out with the butt of a gun. And then he's cut to prison camp, the Wilshire Detention Center, all caps. And he's inside of some facility that has an electronic fence, and they all have collars and stuff. And he has a really terrible beard. I don't know if Arnold couldn't grow a beard or if they're just like, we're going to grow these 20 hairs onto his chin.
Well, he's had it before. Didn't he have it in Predator for a little bit too in the beginning where he's got his weird blonde beard?
Nope. Hmm. You're thinking of something else.
I'm thinking of something. Well, I thought it was the beginning of Predator where he's still chewing on the cigar or something. Maybe maybe not.
No. But so anyway, he's this really distractingly terrible beard. And he apparently has some plan in the works that he's going to escape by collaborating with his other inmates to pretend like they're fighting as a distraction for this other guy to get the code from the box thing from the guy with the gas mask. And then by virtue of doing that, they are able to actually get out of the camp by faking this riot. And then they get out there and he tries to use the box to do the stuff, but it doesn't turn off the fence right. It like half turns it off, so it's oscillating.
Yeah, it's blocked by the concrete wall, so yeah, it was bouncing between on and off. But then they also did the thing where the guy was like running for the border, and there was also another guy there with another storm case. Maybe they had like dueling storm cases where like one guy was turning it off and one was turning it back on, and then that's why he kept flipping, and then the guy ran there, and it turns out that their little onesies with glowy collars are lined with explosives, so if you go outside the electronic dog fence, your head explodes.
Yeah, so his head exploded. It's rather surprising, really. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, they're going to do this to illustrate his head exploding, and then they actually really illustrated his head exploding. I was like, oh, somewhat surprising for a 1987 film. But they
it blew up pretty large.
Yeah, they blew his head up good. So they still manage to effect their escape after this, and they get to an underground center where they're getting their collars removed, and this is where we get our first Los Angeles matte painting, and the sort of wastes of downtown Los Angeles, or I don't know where they are, like Boyle Heights or something. I have no idea where this is supposed to be situated in relation to the skyscrapers. We have no geography in this film that you can really latch onto and say that you know where it is, other than later on in the film, there's the studio building that you see several times, and that is the SPE building, which used to be the MGM building, which I think they called the Filmland building for a while, and that's that sort of awful mauve ziggurat that's in Culver City, across from Sony Pictures Studio. It is very 80s. It is an incredibly 80s building. And the interior of that lobby looks exactly like that, although I think they're remodeling it right now. The fountain, though, they had put some sort of really bizarro metal structure over that fountain, so it doesn't quite look the same as it does there in the opening establishing shot, but more or less the same.
Mm. Well, it looked like a good place to pull up in your red Mercedes limo that it looks like they just cobbled two cars together and made longer, because I don't think that's a real thing.
No, but it's the future, Dan. You can have any red Mercedes limo you want.
It's the future where creepy TV hosts sort of are in charge of people's lives and drive gaudy vehicles into large, gaudy buildings and do terrible things.
Yeah, and we know he's a bad guy because the guy who's mopping the floor almost accidentally causes him to slip, and he says, "Oh no, it's okay, don't worry about it." And he goes in the elevator and he says to his assistant, "If that guy's mopping the floors tomorrow, then you'll be mopping the floors the rest of your life, blah, 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 blah." So that lets you know he's not a nice guy. It's called subtle writing. And
he wants everyone else who doesn't know him very well to love him.
Yeah.
Because he's needy.
I want a movie that's just about the backstory behind him as the emperor of this crazy entertainment scheme, like, because it's fully incorporated as part of the government, basically, and there are several mentions of the larger government apparatus that functions through them, that they serve. So it would be much more interesting to me to watch this movie from the perspective of the antagonist, and just see all the machinations about how he came to power and betrayed everyone around him in order to be in charge of the reality game, rather than watch a movie about some guy who just happened to be unlucky enough to be caught by him and be put through his game machine and just happened to win. Because I don't find that at any point in this film that Arnold demonstrates that he has a particular skill set that allows him to beat anyone any better than any of the other contestants possibly could have, other than that he's Arnold Schwarzenegger. So,
well, he's wrongly convicted, and while we may assume some of the previous contestants were because it happened to him, he's a good guy. He's on the side of the military. He has a good moral compass, so that's why he uses that to guide himself and win some favor with the audience and start to overturn the game there, where everyone's rooting for the runners to die.
Yeah, but he's like still Arnold Schwarzenegger, so...
Yeah, he's still just Arnold Schwarzenegger running around killing people and saying bad puns.
So I'm less interested in him. And he's got all of his Arnold catchphrases, too.
God, there's so many catchphrases.
I'll be back. He says it several times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like all of the places where you would be subtle, Stephen D'Souza. They just decided, well, this is Arnold, we got to give him some catchphrases.
And then Stephen D'Souza did another line of coke.
off of a $100 bill.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. I don't know anything about Stephen D'Souza. He's probably a very nice person who's never done cocaine in his life. But in my mythical story...
He made major Hollywood features in the 80s. I think it's probably a safe assumption that even if he was not into it, somebody was probably telling him it was like, I don't know, good for his hair or something, and convinced him to do it anyway. They were putting it in the water back then.
Yeah, well, see, I just don't want to be sued. That's the only thing. So I agree with you to an extent that I will not be sued. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
But,
allegedly. But in terms of the story about how Dawson came to power, I mean, it could be something as simple as, you know, a beloved TV host finds himself in the running for a political office, and then gets there and decides, nah, I'm better suited for being a public figure, so maybe I'll just pivot and still keep most of my stature, but use it for entertaining audiences, and then I'll still sort of control the government, but I don't really have to, you know, do all the dirty work of the day-to-day, and I'll just sort of kill people as I see necessary, because, you know, I can.
Yeah. I mean, it would be terrible if he were to take on the role of president. That's why he's not President Killian. And
the president was too boring for him. So he gave it to some little peon and he went and got his show where he can just do whatever he wants without the checks and balances associated with the president office.
Yeah, because with a show like this, you could have, you know, people studying under you. You could train the next generation of people doing this. They could be your apprentices. You could do all kinds of things. And with a president job, you can't really do that. You can't establish a dynasty.
Dynasty.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, all of our failed jokes about stuff.
These aren't jokes. These are humor covering real wounds.
Yes, like chocolate covered raisins. I don't know. So
whoa! Chocolate covered raisins are delicious. They are not wounds.
I'd rather have yogurt covered raisins. Thank you very much.
You would rather have yogurt covered raisins instead of chocolate covered raisins.
Yes.
Now I will admit that the Raisinette brand packaged chocolate covered raisins that you can get at the movie theaters have declined in quality greatly since the 90s, but a good chocolate covered raisin is still good.
Okay. Where do you get your good chocolate raisins from?
1994. I don't know. Like, it's been a while since I've had a really good one.
You just have a vault full of raisinettes from 1994.
Well, see, it was the thing my dad always used to get at the movies, and I would steal some of his because what would I always get? Like Red Vines or something.
Well, but, I thought you would always get Junior Mints and a cherry slushy or Slurpee, whatever.
Icy. Come on. Okay. Get on brand here. But that's my tradition now. That was not the tradition back then. And again, in part, the Junior Mints are the tradition because the Raisinettes have declined in quality. They're very dry. But I think Costco sells them in those giant stupid tubs, and they are still good Raisinettes.
Well, I've heard that buying Reese's Peanut Butter Cups direct from the factory is way better than getting them from the store. So maybe what you need to do is buy Raisinettes direct from the factory.
I love all our friends on the internet, but I don't care at all about where people find their peanut butter cups.
You're not even gonna buy the Raisinettes from the factory, straight from the factory, Dan.
The Raisinette factory.
Yeah, they put the clear coating on straight from the factory.
Yeah, no. I think this is again an opportunity because I think they're owned probably by somebody who doesn't care. This is an opportunity for me to once again branch out and create yet another artisanal brand of chocolate-covered raisins.
Oh.
I'll just call it Raisinettes, and I'll just like add like an extra T or something.
Where would you put the extra T?
In the T's.
Oh, because I was going to say, you got to be careful, because otherwise you got Ratsinettes.
No. But no, I think this is an opportunity, because, make Raisinettes good again or whatever. They were never the greatest candy because, again, it's, raisins. But
yes,
I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's a heart of dried grape.
I'm just saying, if it comes down, if our comparison here is chocolate-covered raisins versus yogurt-covered raisins, a good chocolate-covered raisin is going to beat a good yogurt-covered raisin.
A popular brand in the UK is called Payne's Puppettes, which are sold in small boxes.
Is this something you found on your Google?
Yeah.
Oh.
The Glossette brand in Canada consists of various chocolate-covered candies, including raisins, and are usually sold in resealable rigid cardboard boxes as opposed to plastic bags.
See, and this is the other thing. Like most traditional movie candy, back in the 90s, Raisinettes were sold in a Junior Mints-esque box where you would tear open the edge of the paper box and you would pour some out in your hand. And now, somehow they're in a plastic bag inside of a paper box that has like a little cutout on the front so you can see the Raisinettes inside the plastic bag. They're sealed, and yet they are basically chocolate powder on dried raisin. So it's the driest thing possible. Like if you've ever had those like candy aisle cookie dough that's like dry, not real cookie dough, it tastes like astronaut food or something. It's like that level of dry.
Wow. That's not great. You already have moisture problems as it is.
Mm-hmm. We're in the desert, for Christ's sake. We need a moist raisin.
Okay. I mean, by their very definition, they're not terribly moist.
Well, they're a dehydrated version of a very moist fruit.
What about chocolate-covered prunes?
That, I think, well, there's a couple of problems with that.
It would help with a lot of things in your life. I know you don't get to move around a bunch, but this would certainly help with movement.
I don't need that kind of assistance. Also, I think based on the scale, there would be an issue with the ratio of the chocolate to fruit, and not to mention a taste issue with the flavor of the actual fruit.
You don't like the flavor of prunes?
They're fine. They're not raisins. They have a bit more of a funkier taste.
I'm sorry. Middle America Dan is shining through right now.
I do like dates.
Okay. Figs,
those sorts of things, but
I mean, I like to keep my dates short, raisins. Like coffee shops or, you know, something like that. I don't like to. I've learned my lesson with, you know, dates at movie theaters or dates at, you know, dinner. And stuff. Yeah, because then you never know until, like, you sit down and you're like, oh God, I got to get out of here for like an hour. It's a lesson I learned many, many years ago.
It's a lesson you learned from Sleepless in Seattle, because there's basically an entire scene where
I've never seen Sleepless in Seattle.
Oh, let me tell you what, we're gonna get you some chocolate covered raisins, and you're gonna sit down and you're gonna watch Sleepless in Seattle.
Can we watch it for well, next month is gonna be Valentine's. This is our next major holiday.
It's a Valentine's movie. It's a Valentine's Day movie.
Oh, of course it is. Thank you, Nora Ephron. Is that Nora Ephron?
I don't remember. But I mean,
assuming
it was when Meg Ryan was not insane.
Hey, now. Well, you know.
It was when Meg Ryan was peak Meg Ryan.
Okay.
Well, I guess Harry Met Sally might have been peak Meg Ryan, but it was close. Yep. Rob Reiner's got a little cameo in there.
Directed by Nora Ephron. Written by Nora Ephron. Oh, sorry. Story by Jeff Arch. Screenplay by Jeff Arch, Nora Ephron, and David S. Ward.
Mm-hmm. You can find the house on Google Maps or whatever and look at it. It's a real house down on the docks. They live on the water there.
Okay.
Rains a lot because it's in Seattle.
Never heard that about Seattle before. Tell me more.
There's water and like an outdoor market where people go to eat things.
That sounds very real. Can you, in that market area, would you say it's very much like a real world experience?
I am not steering this conversation into that skid.
Okay, sorry. I've seen real world Seattle. Come on.
Of course you have.
People stop being polite and start getting real.
Oh my God, don't. You should start a real world podcast. Amanda can be on it with you. She loves that garbage.
Oh, I can't watch that anymore. I think New Orleans was the last one I saw.
Well, it's all competitions now. They get the real world and Road Rules people together, and they have competitions in Brazil or something, and they like team up people that hate each other, and they have to work together, so it's extra interesting.
Yeah, they had just started doing that around that time, where they were having real world versus Road Rules.
Oh, yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, and they were bad, but I remember channel surfing like 5 or 6 years ago and coming across something that was on, and it was like, I couldn't believe that Coral was still on one of the shows, and then they were going up again. It's like, these people are like in their mid to late 30s, and they're like...
Some are even older, but now it's just like, there's a house component too, so it's like, let's take all these people and put them in one house together and get them really drunk, and they hate each other, but they gotta work together. And then it's like, you guys gotta climb Mount Everest, you've got 2 hours, go. And then if you get there, you get $50,000. And now they've got these extra spins where they're like, they're on a team with somebody they hate, and then they get to the very end, and if you win, you have the opportunity to like screw over your partner and take all of their money. And apparently that happened on one of these that I sort of walked through the room and saw, and it was like, wow, that's messed up. He just took $250,000 away from this person that he was working with this whole time, and he doesn't even care. But there's horrible people doing horrible things to each other.
Speaking of teams and horrible people, we should go back to The Running Man, because Arnold develops quite the team. In that he goes to meet his brother after the resistance people cut off his collar thing. And his brother isn't there. He's in a lady's apartment. And the lady comes home, and it's Maria Conchita Alonso, and he puts his hand over her mouth, which is the routine way of saying hello to anyone. And
once you're stuck into the house, that's about your only option.
Yeah, and then he terrifies her for hours, I guess, before they go to the airport. And then while they're in the airport with the travel pass, he has a very sweet Aloha shirt on that's silk, I think.
He's got his hat, too, and the glasses. It's a good look.
Yeah, what is that, a Stetson? I don't know hats.
No, I think it's one of the smaller varieties.
Oh, it's a Tommy Bahama? I don't know. It's a more of a Jimmy Buffett.
It's a Dodgson. It's basically the outfit Dodgson was wearing in Jurassic Park.
Oh,
when he met Nedry.
Oh, we got Dodgson over here. Dodgson. Nobody cares. So they go through security, and then she sees a security guy and makes a scene, and then he runs for the runway, which is more for planes than people, really, because it makes it very easy to catch him. And he forgets
the number one rule of running away from somebody with a net gun, which is to serpentine. He's just running in a straight line. He's being chased by a vehicle. So you would think, you know, use your agility, change directions or something. But no, he doesn't. He gets net gunned, and then he's captured because everyone's got shotguns all up in his face by the time he gets out of the net.
Yeah, and he skinned his elbow. Did you see?
I saw that. Yeah. He's really committed to this role.
Yes, unfortunately. So he gets captured and taken to the studio, and then he's introduced to Dawson, who's like, oh, hello, cutie pie, which is peculiar. And Dawson makes him an offer that if he agrees to participate in the program, that he will let go two of his co-conspirators that they caught from the escape earlier in the film. And so
leverage. He's got all the leverage from somewhere.
Not from that TNT show, because that hadn't happened yet.
Oh god, that show was so bad. Did you watch that show?
No, I've never seen it. I've seen trailers for it, and I was like, pass.
The whole series is just like, how can we bring some tax breaks to Portland?
Ah, wow.
Sorry, Portland.
With Portlandia? I don't know. But I
actually shoot it there, so.
I don't. When I see TNT, like, as a network attached to a TV show, I'm like, good luck with that, guys. Peace. May the force be with you. I'm not along on this ride.
that's even below USA with some of their original series.
Yeah, like Rizzoli and Isles. Oh, God.
Oh, no. I was a Burn Notice fella for a little bit.
But that was USA.
Isn't that what I said?
Yeah.
Yeah, USA.
I said Rizzoli and Isles is bad.
Oh, which one are they on?
TNT.
Oh, TNT. Yeah, well, they know drama and stuff, so.
Yeah, and USA knows characters.
I feel like we could have a TV network and just come up with some stupid motto and just use that to mold all of our shows.
I don't know how we could possibly come up with a stupid motto, but so the we'll have to run it past our logo department. Where even was I at this point?
He's locked in a little room, and what's his name says one of us is in deep trouble, and you if you volunteer to be in my running man, I'll let your friends go, because there's also this like unexplored plot where basically they're not allowed to use military prisoners, because the TV show basically takes prisoners and throws them into this hilarious game for all of the sadistic people of Los Angeles or around the world to watch, where crazy guys in LED suits with chainsaws cut bad guys in half for fun. But they don't get military prisoners ever. But then there's, you know, he's not really a military prisoner, as what's his name says, because he's still on the run. So he calls the president's agent and says, like, hey, can I do this military thing if I go capture him myself? Because you guys can't capture him if I capture him for my TV show, because I have all the resources. I'll get him to volunteer or whatever, and he'll sign a contract and then stab a pen into the lawyer's back. But the joke's on Arnold, because he agrees to be on the Running Man show to save his friends' lives. But turns out he got double-crossed. His friends are going to be on the show with him anyway, because what's-his-name has no checks and balances. Richard Dawson can do whatever he feels like, because he's in charge of the show, and everyone loves him because they don't know how sadistic he really is. And he makes up all kinds of stuff about, like, when they capture Arnold and they're introducing him. They say he killed all the people in Bakersfield. And they re-edit the film, like the movie, to make it look like he was the bad guy. It's not like they had like a CCTV camera that they re-edited, because there's like four different angles or something inside of the helicopter that they recut. It just goes to show you the power of editing.
The power of film footage that you'd shot earlier.
Right, the power of film footage with a different voiceover track coming through the radio. Cut with Arnold makes it look like he bombed a bunch of innocent civilians against his boss's wishes, and that's why they called him the Butcher of Bakersfield. And then he killed a couple people at the airport while he was trying to escape, and he's a bad guy. So let's throw him in the game and let him get who's the first bad guy? It was Dirt Bike guy? No, he was the second guy.
Yeah, the first one was Sub Zero.
The first bad guy was Professor Sub Zero with his slicey sword hockey stick and explosive pucks.
What was interesting about that was Sub-Zero was selected by audience members, which becomes a running gag, for lack of a better term for this.
all of the best game shows have an audience participation factor.
Yeah, and so, of course, they ask the audience to pick the opponents for the people running through the area outside to do battle with. And the first lady, she talks about, like, oh, you know, my husband and my son would really like these ones, but I just want somebody big and cuddly. I got to go with Professor Sub-Zero. And so they pick Professor Sub-Zero. It's mildly entertaining. I actually quite enjoy every time Dawson talks to one of the fake audience members here. The next lady,
don't forget, they get like points based on what sort of moves or hits or whatever the stalker gets against the runner.
Yeah, and that translates to Dawson handing them Christmas wrapping boxes.
And there's like a Running Man board game or something that they win. It's very weird.
Yeah, and was the name of it INS or ICS? Box set of videos about Running Man. It was very interesting.
It's the greatest hits of killing supposed conflict.
Yeah, your snuff
convicts,
video collection.
Good lord.
But the it's mildly entertaining just because it's very dark. But the other thing about this is that Amber, played by Maria Conchita Alonso, who had witnessed him being taken down and being taken into custody, saw the news and, you know, heard all about, like, how he had killed all these people and, like, how violent he was when he was taken in and blah, 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 blah. And she's like, no, that didn't happen. He was so nice. And it's like, somebody got Stockholmed awful fast, because I don't know why you would be that heavily invested in Arnold, but she is. And she coincidentally happens to work at the company that puts on the show.
She's a musician. She made the theme song. But yeah, he kept saying the whole time, like, I was framed. Don't freak out. Don't run away. I need your help to escape and stuff. I was framed. I didn't kill anybody. And then when she sees the news saying he shot some people point blank in the face, she just kind of looks down and goes, like, well, that didn't happen. Maybe she feels like she should investigate, because she feels a little bad that he got caught because of her. And maybe he really isn't a bad guy and he is getting framed. So they use this incredibly stupid device of her, like, using her clearance to, like, slowly sneak through control rooms to get to the back tape room. But, like, her discovery is really that there are two tapes, and one of them is labeled raw footage and one of them is labeled edited for TV. Like, she doesn't even get to watch them before she gets captured by some hand from nowhere that we don't exactly know who it is.
Yeah, that happens off screen. There's a really very strange conversation she has with apparently an office coworker about her experience. And
$6 for a soda. Can you believe this thing?
Yeah. No.
It's 2017. You're paying $6 for a soda.
I was mainly talking about some other things they talk about. But so anyway, they have a very strange conversation. But she gets the tape, like you're saying, and then off screen she is captured, and we see her later in their little spandex jumpers. And she gets propelled on the same rocket sled thing down to the course. And she contests that she's innocent, and Richard Dawson is like, nope, nobody's innocent here. Play the footage. So apparently they have a bunch of evidence on her. And then we cut back into some of him talking about that later on when they're strapping on the sort of metal cage that goes over the rocket car sled part. And, you know, they're talking about how many times she's had sex out of wedlock, et cetera. Just to let you know how totally wackadoodle this stuff is. And
she used to cheat on her college exams, too. So she's bad. She totally deserves to die.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, this is one of those things where it's like, you know what? I bet you that if this were to happen, like right now, like on Twitter, like, oh, this person deserved to die because of all this stuff. And then everybody on Twitter would be like, yeah, totally. That totally deserved to happen. And be like, wow, so Twitter's our game show. And yeah, this is some dark stuff. Anyway, this is some place my mind wandered to.
Mm-hmm. It is a world where the thinnest, least fact-checked accusations are bought wholesale by people who are just thirsty for entertainment. And it is used as justification for doing horrible things to innocent people.
Well, not just thirsty for entertainment, but thirsty for someone else to be punished and for justice to be served in a very loose
retribution, as it were.
Yeah, like they deserve punishment just because of all of the things going on in their lives, and they can feel better about themselves because someone else was punished. But so anyway, she gets down to the course, and there's all the stuff happening on the course. Professor Sub-Zero segment had already happened. He was strangled by the barbed wire.
razor wire, actually.
Yeah. Yikes.
I was surprised his head didn't come flying off because they did the exploding head earlier. Maybe they used all of their head removal budget on the exploding head and didn't have any more for a head to roll off from the razor wire, but I don't know.
Yeah, traveling mats are expensive.
Well, they could have done it with, you know, a cut and then like
that was a joke. I would really hope they would not do it with a traveling man. But they also, with the Sub-Zero thing, they have the worst pun, I guess. Like I couldn't believe it. Like I was in absolute shock when this happened.
Here is Sub-Zero, now Plain Zero.
And you'd even warned me about it because we were basically watching it at the same time, and you're messaging me, and you're like, oh, there's some puns coming up for you. And, what? It's not a pun. Like, just Sub-Zero is now Plain Zero, and it's like, what is that? Like, that's not even a joke.
Well, there was also he was a pain in the neck, which,
yeah,
was a little bit better.
Yeah, well, that one's not so bad, but the Plain Zero makes literally no sense. Can you explain that to me? Other than submarine and airplane, I have no idea how that's supposed to be a play on words.
He's just the number zero. Because he's dead? I don't know.
Okay.
He's a zero.
Yeah.
Not a hero.
Yeah, well, he wasn't a hero to begin with. But so anyway, that was really strange. And I thought that was bizarre. This actually upsets Killian when Sub-Zero dies, and he gets on the line with the I don't know, some government muckety muck. They don't say who it is specifically, but and he's talking about Gilligan's Island, and they make like a reference to it, and he's like, yeah, the one with the boat, and he even hums a few bars of the theme song. So it's kind of entertaining. And then we get the next bad guy, who's gonna be Dynamo. He comes out with his opera singing and lightning.
Well, they can't decide, so they do two at a time on this next run. You got Dynamo, and then you got
Buzzsaw.
Buzzsaw, is that what it was?
Buzzsaw.
I thought that was just the first stupid idea that came to my head, but apparently that's them too.
They said Buzzsaw 50,000 times, so it was definitely Buzzsaw. And they send both of them down after them. And instead of working together, they kind of just meander around at roughly the same time. And it's weird because Buzzsaw, apparently his main strategy is I will drive a motorcycle at you with an easy to avoid chainsaw. And he manages to fatally wound one of the characters played by Yafakoto somehow by accident.
Well, it's very quick and he can raise it up and down and stuff. And it's a somewhat narrow corridor.
No, but it's the whole cliched, oh no, I'll push you out of the way so that you don't get hurt, but I'll wind up getting hurt. And it's like, no one needed to get hurt. There's literally no reason why anyone should have been hit by this chainsaw. It was silly.
Yeah, but he saves him in a heroic act, and the audience is getting to see that the quote-unquote bad guys in the game are not really bad. They're looking out for each other, and they're just trying to survive, and it's not like they're being particularly sadistic or anything, but then you got Buzzsaw ropes. What's Schwarzenegger with his little? There's probably a name for that thing with the three little balls on the end of the thing.
Yes.
Yeah, he ropes him and drags him around behind the motorcycle for a while, and then Schwarzenegger wraps that around some rebar and flips him off the bike, and then he thinks he's out, but he's not out, so they get into hand-to-hand combat, and basically, bottom line, he grabs the chainsaw and cuts him in half through the crotch, which is, it sounds pretty unpleasant, if I do say so.
Yeah, interesting choice when you said bottom line.
Hmm. Yeah, not anymore.
Yeah. Nope. But so
right up the middle.
And he has a high pitched shriek because that's what happens when anyone's hit in the groin. Even if you're hitting with a chainsaw in the groin, apparently. So that's interesting. And then meanwhile, nerdy satellite guy who's obsessed with all the satellites they've seen, and Amber are at one of the terminals, and he's trying to hack it in to the things, to the back door or whatever.
Yeah, there's a bunch of little boxes of fuses, but he knocks it open with a rock, and it turns out it's a computer panel, and he hacks into it because he's a smart guy with glasses.
Yeah, well, that's what the glasses are for. And so he gets the code from his hacking, which is like, I don't know, what was it, 8 digits? 7?
Well, there was a letter in there, too. There was like an X or something.
It's ridiculous. And he gives it to her, she overhears what he's saying. And then he's hit by electricity from Dynamo and falls over kaput. And she's shocked by the side effects of that electricity, but not like mortally wounded. And then there's a bunch of like fighting and stuff and things. And then Dynamo goes chasing around in a car and flips over and his power goes out.
Yeah, Arnold just runs up a hill to get like a stick. And Dynamo just like follows him up the hill in his little race car, which is not equipped for such driving. And he flips over and he keeps saying he's out of power, even though his LEDs are still on, but I guess they're like a low power draw, so it's okay. So he's out of zapping power. But Arnold's there, and instead of stabbing him, he stabs very near to his head to sort of make a point like, hey, bro, I could end you right now, but I'm not gonna because you're defenseless or something, and that's not right. And then all the people watching at home through the camera start booing or whatever because they're, I don't know, either bloodlust or... they're just like, well, he's not a bad guy. Why are we still insisting that he be killed?
Bread and circuses. So they, you know, have the whole thing where they're going to go off and do more satellite things. Now she has the code, but then they
right because this is, I missed this part. There's supposedly a hidden transmission room somewhere inside the game, populated with people that they need to get to with the code.
Yeah, turns out where it is actually the main ICS building in Culver City, or wherever the movie thinks that building is. Because that's where they walk back to later.
Right, because they were in their long little rocket sled things that go somewhere else out into the game, but by the time they have the code and control over the satellite. He just like opens a door and he's back in that main, that like one hallway that they shot most of this in, and then he sneaks into the control room and stuff.
Yeah, some of them go to the control room, some of them go to the studio. But anyway, they activate Fire Guy, and he's going to go on set, and Jesse Ventura is freaking out now because he might go on set, and he's Captain Freedom or whatever. Is Captain Freedom?
Mm-hmm.
So he's some very intense looks about himself because he's very concerned about being activated next. And he has a ridiculous getup in this. He has an exercise commercial which plays when Arnold first breaks into her apartment at the beginning of the film, and I find it absolutely hilarious because it's let's say playing against type, I guess, for Jesse Ventura. But then
when he was actually going in to fight against Maria, I know it was the traveling Matt body double version, but I was expecting her to go like, I do your aerobics class, please don't kill me.
Well, no, I don't think they have that in detail. But he's strange because he also has the weird reddish hair, reddish brown. I don't know what they were going for with that color, but and a blue blazer. And he's supposed to be like a sports commenter, sort of, like a retired sports guy who comments on sports now.
He won the Hunger Games, and now he's still just employed by the company, and he hangs out and he talks.
Yeah, yeah, and so he's having anxiety about having to go out into the field if the Fire Guy fails. And the Fire Guy goes out there and he sets a bunch of stuff on fire. And they're all like, oh no. And then he like sets part of the hallway on fire and he walks right through it with the whatever that is that they put on people so that they don't burn, that you can clearly see.
He's a tough guy and he's not, fire is his weapon and he ain't afraid of a little bit of fire to walk through until you literally pull the gas feed cord out of the top of his flamethrower and let it spray everywhere and then throw a flare. He threw the flare on the ground in front of him, I guess, which was the polite thing to do when you're making a movie, but he should have just like thrown it directly at the spout to make it explode.
Another thing about that, did it seem remarkably flimsy how that gas line was connected?
Yeah, well, I mean, either that or Arnold is just really strong.
Yeah, well, it was also like teeny tiny. It was a tiny little cord. It was ostensibly full of gasoline.
Braided metal cable, which should have probably been a little stronger. And there should also probably be an anti-siphon valve on that tank, so stuff like that doesn't happen. But what are you gonna do?
Yeah, well, you know, the government ain't what it used to be. You have to contact the entertainment division for their policies on workplace safety.
I mean, see, you know, all of the checks and balances and the security commissions are over there in the government, and he's over here in entertainment land where presumably they disbanded the entertainment unions as well, so he could just, you know, be in charge of that, and he just does what he wants to do. OSHA is not even, like, on his radar. Doesn't even need it.
I mean, you don't need useless government regulation. I got mine. That's the important story.
Yeah, and, exactly.
And so he gets his because he's set on fire. This is after Amber had discovered the three corpses of the previous winners who are still being played on little segments, you know, like, oh, they're all happy and stuff in Maui.
They paid their debt to society, and now look at them. They're in their shiny suits in Hawaii hanging out with attractive people on the beach.
Yeah, and they're all dead in this abandoned locker room, which is a little strange. But so they get out of there after that, and they go outside, and they're talking and stuff, and it's like, you know, this is going to be a problem. And he decides to pull the trigger on just framing them, basically, like saying that they're dead.
People in the audience are starting to turn, too. The one lady, instead of placing her bet on one of the stalkers, places her bet on Schwarzenegger to be the next one to kill. And everyone's like, what? You can't do that. That's against the rules. And she's like, I'll do whatever I want. Don't make me call your mother, young man. And she places a bet on Arnold. And everyone starts placing bets on Arnold, even back in the detention camp for some reason, which is kind of weird. It's starting to get out of control. So he uses his traveling mat software to put Arnold's face on a body double and presumably Maria as well. And then they have Jesse in his old school little spandexy outfit throw him into some razor wire and spikes, very Mortal Kombat-esque, and kill him. And then everyone's like, oh, sad and stuff, because the game's over and the hero that was turning it around is dead. But he's not really dead.
Yeah, because meanwhile, they had made their way to the underground bunker of the resistance, and there's Collar Guy back again, and he recognizes them, and they discourse about their events that they've been through. And it's like, why didn't you help us? And it's like, well, we couldn't really do that, because if we went out there on the course and tried to help you out, then we'd be uncovered, so we have to protect ourselves by hiding in the shadows. But now that you've made your way to us, we can try to get out of here. And she's like, oh, I got the code for the thing, and so we'll go do the plan. But
and
they
also
have...
don't, by the way, she has the she was able to keep the raw footage of Butchers of Bakersfield, or whatever it's called, hidden somewhere. And
yeah,
they're gonna use that as the proof, because up until now they were gonna break into the satellite and do something. I mean, all they really had to do was be like, hey guys, we're not dead, they're lying to you. But instead they use that footage along with like a sizzle reel of other stuff with some so like text over that says like he's lying to you and things.
Yeah, my notes were literally, where did she hide that tape? And then there's the line in the film like where Arnold says, where did you hide that tape? And then she's like, I'm not going to tell you. And it's like, oh my God, I can't believe he asked her. Because that's just something you don't ask somebody. That's just something that we in the audience go, oh my God, where did she hide the tape? But so anyway.
Well, it's got to be the beginning of the... somewhat gross innuendo between the two of them, because at the end, of course, well, we'll get to the end when we get to the end.
In the end, all bets are off. Literally.
Yeah. Because, I mean, mostly because the bookies start throwing money up in the air.
Yeah.
But not a really good way to run your business.
No. Well, if something tells me they don't have much of a business anymore. But they, so they do the thing with the satellite uplink override, and all the convoluted stuff, and like, oh, we got to control things so they make sure they don't bounce their signal off a different satellite and et cetera. And so they have the resistance fighters who have come upon some berets up here in the control room, and they keep...
The change happens, like, yeah, the best part is they break into the control room like super A-team style. Like, they're all just like in the doorway pointing guns at him, like just sort of like all around the room in a very sort of posed fashion, and like... What does he say? Don't change that dial. Don't touch that dial. And
yeah,
you know, cut away.
Yeah, like there are dials anymore. But
da, 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 da.
Yeah, and Kurt, what's his face? He's in the control room the whole entire time, and he's like, oh. And then out in the audience, Dawson is there, but he's gobsmacked by the footage that's being played, because it's a terrible reel of him cut together, sort of. I don't know how to describe it. Like performance art, like if you're making some sort of commentary on news or something, I have no idea. It's very strange. But they just sort of like loop back and forth over a couple frames, and you're like, yeah, I'm not lying, you know, et cetera. It's mm-hmm. weird. And then they play the footage, the original unaltered footage of the helicopter. And people are so shocked.
I mean, you know, just like the first time, the audience completely buys it. Not a single person stood up and goes like, hey, what if the other version's real and this one's fake? Although I guess there's less cutting in this version, so they kind of would be like, oh, he did say
yeah,
those
well,
other things, like I'm not going to shoot innocent people.
They're really good with their critical thinking faculties, so, you know. Well,
hey, wait a minute, we got duped.
So... anyway, Arnold walks back in, and that also further surprises everyone, because they had seen footage of him being killed, and Killian is like, what? And then his security guards are shooting at the wall near Arnold Schwarzenegger, and then the security guards are dispatched, and then everybody's like, oh my God, gunshots, oh, this is terrible, we need to leave. We only like to watch people getting murdered. And that leaves Killian and Schwarzenegger, mano a mano, and Sven, the security guard guy, who comes back in. And apparently, Dawson had been very rude to him. As a result, he doesn't want to cooperate, and he leaves. And when he leaves, that means that Dawson is in the hands of Arnold Schwarzenegger, who puts him inside of one of the little rocket cars. Rocket sleds, and then lowers the cage on him, and then, you know, has his whole cliched spiel, like, I told you I'd be back, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to, you know, here you go, cutie pie. I'm going to, you know, send you out there. Like, one of us is going to, whatever, etc. And then he jettisons him down the little tube thing, and then he crashes into the Kadrikola sign, which was outside of the landing zone, and he explodes. And
is that just because they, like, took the net down or something?
I have no idea.
It worked four times in a row earlier.
Yeah, maybe he held the button down too hard. I don't know.
He hit the turbo button on the tube.
Yeah, the booster rocket. So it wasn't properly calibrated for his...
Right, it's supposed to be calculated based on your body weight. It's how they know how much gas to put in the airplane when you're flying.
Yeah, so he went, and then he crashed and exploded in a sign that was his face. And... you know, him and Maria Cachita Alonso off into the sunset, blah, 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 et cetera.
Don't forget that hit the spot.
Yeah. Goodness. So many really not great puns.
It's a good pun because murdering somebody by sending them into a wall is just as satisfying as like a cold fizzy beverage.
Exactly. And that's the end, and then there's music.
Yeah, there's
like that pause.
Music.
Oh, your reluctance to call it music.
What is this song? It's
Restless Heart.
John Parr singing over a Harold Faltermeyer song.
Mm-hmm.
Called Restless Heart.
Yeah.
In parentheses, running away from you.
This is no game. Standing in the dark. I swear I heard you calling my name. It's just amazing lyrics. Just gotta love it, really.
Roll the dice, make a brand new start, all kinds of stuff. Restless heart. Yeah, I don't think he really had a restless heart in this movie. He was just sort of trying not to die. And then the woman who kind of sort of maybe caused him to almost die, almost died too, but she also sort of like kind of sort of helped him clear his name and destroy the game thing.
Yep.
But you know, it's an action movie in the 80s, so they got to make out a little bit awkwardly while the song plays. And then I get, you know, the cameras are still rolling, which is weird for a little while, and then they like walk off through the stage, and then they like cut to static, and like a technical difficulty sign pops up on the giant movie theater screen in the Wilshire district thing.
I don't even think that was inside the detention center. That was where they escaped to.
Right. That was that was the neck collar place thing.
Mm-hmm.
This movie. There's some interesting, very 80s stuff. Like as you pointed out, you've got the Paula Abdul dance
choreography
crew, yeah, doing their thing for a very long time, and I think they do it. There's a pretty good job of doing the build up of this, like this big show that everyone's into, and this large event where Dawson's doing his thing. You know, don't touch the hair while you work on my eyebrows or whatever. But you've got the dancers, you got the crowd getting into it. It just worked everybody up into a frenzy, and they're all super into it until somebody finally snaps them out of it and says, like, "Hey, I'm just killing people for fun here. There are consequences to these things, so let's like not do that."
Oh well, you know. But then at the end of the movie, you can safely say, "At night, I think of you. Want to be your lady, baby."
Yeah. Now that Dawson is dead and the show is ostensibly off the air because you know they are inseparable, you couldn't just replace Dawson with somebody else because he's such a big personality. You know, the world is safe and freedom reigns again or something because the one guy's dead. And I'm sure the government was doing nothing bad along with the TV show, so everyone should be fine now. Justice will be done throughout the nation forevermore now that Richard Dawson has been killed.
I like how I said some of the lyrics to My Boo, which plays during the Running Man Challenge, and then you just blew right past it. You're like, nope, not doing it.
No, I don't. That's your realm. I'm just gonna go down this emotional journey. This emotional path where I'm left at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
Left to ponder. what world hath Ben Richards left after destroying the Running Man TV show?
Well, without a form of government, there would just be chaos.
Well, there's still government. There's just no TV show.
Well, the TV show was how the government stayed in power.
I think the TV show contributed a great deal to the overall approval ratings for the government. But, you know, I think the government would probably be able to say, like, we had no idea he was editing those tapes and stuff and making it look like people were bad when they weren't really bad and killing them and stuff.
Literally, there was that clunky exposition at the beginning of the film where they're like, the studio closed down schools and, like, all the children are being brainwashed into watching the game shows. Like, you know, it was basically implied. This is a functioning part of the government.
And considering he has a direct line through the operator to the president's secretary or something.
Agent.
President's agent.
He reported to the attorney general.
Mm-hmm. 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 So he basically was the judge and jury for prisoners.
Do you want to know what else Stephen D'Souza worked on?
Yes.
Judge Dredd.
Oh, God. I feel like there had to have been at least a couple of writers on that one.
Yeah, there were. We only had partial writing credit for that. But still, future law. Good stuff. There you go.
I would love to see the breakdown of who wrote what in that.
Well, if you have enough white powder, I'm sure you can persuade somebody to disclose that information to you.
Oh, boy. Is D'Souza still around and kicking? Yeah, he is. He was born in 1947. You should go find him. Sit him down. Be like, all right, we need to talk about some of your films, sir.
I have a bone to pick with you about the third act of Die Hard 2.
I have some questions that I need you to answer. And if you do that, I won't send your friends into this game.
Mm. Bold move there, Dan.
The Running Man. What's the other 80s sort of future dystopian kind of movie that I keep mixing this up with? Where once you get to a certain age, they kill you or whatever?
That's not 80s. That's 70s. That's Now I'm forgetting. But
I can't even think of who's in it to look at.
Logan's Run.
There you go. That's you're right. That is older, isn't it?
Yeah. Significantly older.
But don't they also have some sort of like shiny suits in that too? Maybe that's why I'm conflating the spandex.
The costumes in that are a thing.
1976, Michael. York. Yeah,
you should look at the robot from Logan's Run. Just type Logan's Run robot.
I'm looking through the IMDb photos real quick. Oh, wow, that is an outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's the robot. You know what he looks like? He looks an awful lot like that outfit they tried to put Jesse Ventura in. He's got like a chrome ATM chest piece.
Yeah.
This is very 2001 production design.
Well,
some of it, I should say.
Didn't Logan's Run come out after Star Wars, and yet the robots look
terrible,
real bad.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, budget differences. I'm sure $9 million.
Oh, sorry, 1976. It was a year before Star Wars.
Okay. Well, still, it's no excuse.
Feels like it's 10 years before Star Wars.
Get it together, guys. Maybe they spent all their money on Farrah Fawcett's hair because it is luscious looking.
Oh. That's an interesting term to use to describe someone's hair.
Luscious? No, luscious is a term used for hair.
Okay. Luscious.
Boy. Luscious hair.
Yeah.
Mm.
So how's your hair doing, Dan? Is it luscious?
No, my hair? No, of course not. My hair's just curly and weird. Unless you mean my beard hair, in which case it is also not luscious, but it is a different kind of weird.
Okay, you can stop elaborating about different regions of hair now.
No, that's as far as I was going to go.
Good, because I was going to say you're cut off. Yeah, well, I don't really want to do Logan's Run any of the times on any of these episodes, so hopefully no one writes in and requests that, but I mean, it's a thing, but I feel like it is of its time in a way that revisiting it is not helpful. So, there's that.
Mm. Well, The Running Man was interesting. I feel like I can't enjoy this movie as much as I would have if I had seen it a year ago.
Yeah, you know what? I don't enjoy The Running Man, but it was so bad it was actually kind of entertaining to watch. So I'd put it in our Congo camp, maybe our Johnny Mnemonic camp, where it's just like, if you are looking for something so you can sit there and mock it mercilessly, this is in that
these crazy
that group.
Characters that shoot lightning and wear LED suits and have
and Wagner
chainsaws and stuff, and yeah, it's, you know,
kill
it's,
the wabbit, kill the wabbit. Yep.
Well, what was the they made a movie not too long ago with Jason Statham in it or something, where it's like people driving around in cars trying to kill each other. It's kind of a similar thing, but this one is like the super 80s version. There's actually some cool cinematography in terms of just like lighting and colors and stuff that they do in this movie that's kind of fun, but it's still super cheesy and weird.
Yeah. I mean,
I think
the...
it's notable for very small reasons. Death Race, that's the movie. Thank you, Move Ups.
Yeah, I haven't seen Death Race either, but the only lighting that I actually liked was at the end when they're in the red, pink, and blue lighting. Yeah.
Totally what I was thinking of too.
But that has nothing to do with my personal bias towards it's sort of a lighting scheme.
No, it's, I mean, we wouldn't single those colors out for any purpose.
No, nothing like that. None at all. Certainly nothing to do with the new logo.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm sorry, the classic logo that we unearthed from our archives from when we were doing this podcast in the 80s.
Yeah, the 1984 version, because the 1980 to 84 version had less color, but it was a similar design.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Really hit its stride in 84.
Yeah, there was the bankruptcy in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because of the fraud with the Credit Lyonnais bank. And then, you know, we had to flee to Italy to try to escape extradition. But we got through it.
It's fine. I like Italy. I enjoy it there. It is a peaceful place to hide.
Yeah. Good pasta. Yeah,
good pasta, good wine, a lot of good food.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to run away to Italy right now.
I just don't like Tuscan bread. There's something about not putting salt in bread, which just does not sit well with me.
Not all of it's like that, but I do know what you're talking about.
It's very strange. I don't understand the no salt thing. I mean, supposedly it helps with preservation so it doesn't go stale, which is just bonkers, but it tastes not great. You need salt. That's all I'm going to say. You need salt.
I mean...
Salt your food.
It's not France. You don't need or eat quite as much bread as you would in other places, but the other food makes up for it, I think.
Good porcini pasta.
Yeah.
Went during porcini season last time I was there, and I'm going to be going this upcoming September.
Oh my, going back to Italy.
I am, and we will be stopping in Amsterdam, and we will be stopping in Slovenia.
I was going to say, are you only going to go to the touristy parts of Europe?
I know. Well, see, it was actually Jason's idea, because we were going to stop in Venice, and I had told him about how close Slovenia was to Venice, because that's the airport that Andre had flown out of when he had come to the U.S., and so, of course, he had looked it up, and he's like, oh, Slovenia is not that far away, so we should go visit your friend. And I was just like, interesting you should suggest that, because... I happen to know somebody who happens to sit on the Slovenian tourist board. I mean, not really, but they probably should pay him. They should cut him a check.
Probably.
Yeah. But he
was going to come visit me in Venice, but we couldn't make the days work because we only had a little bit of time there. But you should do that. That'd be great. I want to go to Slovenia, too. It looks cool.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I'm hoping to see Lake Bled. We are trying to organize that into the schedule. And when I say bled, I don't mean like, ooh, blood. I mean, like, if you look at just Google it, it's BLED. It looks beautiful. But we might not have as much time for that, although I'm lobbying for making time for that. But otherwise, it would be mostly the city, Ljubljana, and all that stuff, and Andrzej.
Have you guys been to Venice before?
No, Jason has without me many years ago, and I've never been.
So there are some people who say it's their favorite place. I could kind of take it or leave it. Aside from, you know, St. Mark's, once you see it, it's nice or whatever. But I would totally bail in favor for Ljubljana next time.
Yeah. See, I've heard that from many people, so I'm not super amazingly jazzed about.
Tell me, Joe, do you like being claustrophobic in narrow alleyways full of lots of people, or and go shopping in expensive places that they also have in Beverly Hills?
Not so much.
Well, then you might be okay bailing on Venice after a day or two.
Yeah. So we'll negotiate these things, and then we'll be down in Positano in Amalfi.
Do you like really uncomfortable boat rides?
No.
By the way, I don't remember if I told you, but we were just talking about this recently with somebody. But the little gondola ride, we took one because whatever they told us to, or somebody paid for it. Boy, is that an uncomfortable boat. It's really, really uncomfortable. Like, I think my leg fell asleep because the seat was like 4 inches off the floor, and I had like my leg sort of like folded underneath me in a really weird way. It was not fun.
I'm not really looking forward to that. I have a terrible fear about being in the water in there, and how gross the water is in Venice. I've seen pictures.
We saw a lady like almost fall in. I don't know if she had been drinking or not, but she like slipped and like her leg went in the water, like as she was trying to get out of it. But then, you know, she laughed it off and got out. But the Westin was nice. I remember the hotel was nice-ish, I think. I think we stayed in the Westin there. And who cares?
Yeah, Jason's been trying to nail down the travel plans, and sometimes he asks me questions and I'm like, I don't want to talk about it. It's just September. I don't want to think about it right now.
Well, yeah. The water taxis are safe because you're basically completely enclosed, so you're fine.
Yeah. Well, supposedly we may wind up needing to take the water taxi because of where the airport is situated.
Oh, you're going to need to get in one at least to get to your hotel, probably.
It's
totally fine.
Yeah, because we're flying down from Amsterdam to Venice to do that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we're flying to Ljubljana or something. I don't know. I'm really trying to stay out of everything. I literally gave my email address to Andrzej and I like CC'd Jason on it, and I was just like, you guys go to town and I will be there.
Because I don't want to start a Slack so they can talk to each other.
Yeah. Well, originally Andrzej wanted to do it on Skype, but I was like, I don't know how that's gonna work with the time zones, but here's email. You guys knock it out. I'm just gonna go stand over here and you tell me where I'm gonna be. That's how that's gonna go. I guess I have to have a palachinka though, when I'm there, so I can have a waffle, air quotes, according to our Slovenian correspondent. Even Ursha says that it is not an actual waffle, that it's more like a crepe.
Pancake.
Waffle, that it's more like a crepe. But, you know, so there we go.
Well, it's the origin of pancake, apparently, because you don't make them in a pan or something. So, palachinka.
So, anyway, ta-da. We probably should have ended the episode 20 minutes ago when we started talking about all this random stuff.
Yeah, it's the natural flow of things.
Yeah.
People tune in for banter.
Go with the flow.
That's why I put it at the end, so they got to stay to the end to get the thing that they want.
Which is the ending. They need closure.
And in conclusion...
music.
This is no game. Standing in the dark, I swear. Changed. No pain, no gain. Something in your eyes just told me that this nightmare would end. And I had found a friend. Shout!